As we speak, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is about to begin a debate on questions that have and are dividing many Christian denominations, gay marriage and gay clergy. No matter how tomorrow's vote comes out, at least some Lutherans will be unhappy and may be angry enough to form a breakaway church of their own. The debate is being held at the biannual General Assembly of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Orlando, Florida. Two items dominate formal and informal discussions there. Should sexually active gay clergy be ordained, and should same-sex unions be blessed? Here are two attendees. First, Alan Beaver of Christiana Lutheran Church in Salisbury, North Carolina. Then Mary Anderson of Reformation Lutheran Church in Philadelphia.
Basically, it comes down to, for me, that I believe that the homosexual issue is asking us to legitimize their sin. And I just do not believe that by Scripture that I can do that. And I'm afraid that for them, when their time comes to stand before the Lord and be judged, that they could be burned in eternal hellfire forever because of that. So for that reason, I want to hold them accountable to what I believe the gospel says.
I think that like heterosexuals, homosexuals can use their sexuality sinfully. That's another question. But per se, homosexuality does not seem to be a sin. And I recognize that there are biblical issues with that, but I think that we can use some of the tools that we have used to say that the Bible doesn't endorse slavery and doesn't preclude women to also temper our use of those passages in the Bible.
Again, that was Alan Beaver of Salisbury, North Carolina, then Mary Anderson of Philadelphia. This at the General Assembly of the ELCA, the largest Lutheran denomination in the U.S., a vote on two controversial recommendations is scheduled for tomorrow afternoon. Many Lutherans are wondering if the church can compromise before then and reach some kind of common ground. Coming up later in the program, it's not too late to vote if you put the pedal to the metal. The greatest car chase of all time is playing on all 12 screens at the TOTN Summer Movie Festival. Email us your nominee at toTN@npr.org. But first, churches and gay rights. If you're Lutheran, should gay pastors be ordained and same-sex unions blessed? If you're not, how should churches address homosexuality? A question for all, is there common ground? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is toTN@npr.org. And we go now to Orlando, Florida, where a plenary session is underway for the ECLA. Joining us is NPR's Jason DeRose on the phone from the Orlando World Center Marriott, which is the site of the convention. Nice to have you on the program, Jason.
Nice to be here.
So where do things now stand on the debate?
Well, they're about to start debate. It was supposed to start a bit earlier today, but many other issues have been sort of pushing this farther and farther back. In fact, some people are wondering whether they'll actually get to a vote at all tomorrow, or maybe that vote will come on Saturday morning.
Why should non-Lutherans care about this?
Well, I think that many Protestant denominations around the country besides Lutherans, Presbyterians, Methodists, and others are dealing with this issue. The Episcopal Church a few years ago dealt with this issue, but also the culture at large is trying to figure out what to think of marriage rights, the meaning of marriage, and often those are couched in religious terms. So this meeting happens to be among Lutherans, but we're hearing a lot of the same things that we hear among other Protestants and among the culture in general.
Now, I was asking earlier, one of the questions to the listeners is, is there common ground? In a way, the proposals being put forward at this convention, in a way, they represent compromises.
That's right. There are actually three proposals. The first proposal, some might call the "Can't We Just All Get Along" proposal, meaning that the church will take a vote on whether this should be a church-dividing issue. And hopefully what the people at the ELCA say is that they hope that delegates will say this should not divide the church regardless of the outcome of the vote. The second issue they're voting on is whether or not pastors and congregations should be allowed to bless same-sex unions. No pastor or congregation would be forced to, but individual congregations can now and would still be allowed to under the second proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And the third proposal has to do with whether or not people in same-sex relationships could be ordained as clergy if they're granted special exceptions to a rule which says that unmarried clergy of any sort, gay or straight, must be celibate. But since there is no order for marriage in the Lutheran Church among people of the same sex, this would grant them an exception, that they could be ordained.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people say that that is common ground because it's an exception to a rule that doesn't go away. But others, those opposing the ordination, say what currently exists is common ground, which is that clergy can be gay as long as they promise to remain celibate, and that's not something required of married heterosexual clergy.
And there are also those who say, in favor of homosexual rights, saying none of these go far enough.
Well, that's true. Some people want to abolish the entire rule that precludes gays and lesbians in same-sex relationships from serving as clergy altogether. They say do away with that rule entirely.
Mm-hmm. Now, any chance that these motions will be altered by the debate before they're put up for a vote?
Well, there's always a chance because the National Assembly is the highest legislative body of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, so someone could put forth a proposal that says, let's do away with all the rules altogether. Others might put forward proposals that say, no, we need to make even more conservative proposals. We need to, preclude people who identify themselves as gay or lesbian. This body can make those decisions.
And before they get to a vote, I wonder, can you gauge at this point how electric is this issue? Is it, do you think, or could it be a church-dividing issue?
Well, I think that from what I'm hearing from people that I've spoken with this weekend while I was doing some reporting and then yesterday and today while I've been here in Orlando, is that people don't want the church to be divided over this issue. They don't want a schism. They don't want breakaway movements. People seem to want to stay together. But I was walking around the convention hotel today, and there were hundreds of delegates wearing rainbow sashes around their necks, rainbow pins. There are also hundreds of delegates wearing little Luther seals, little seal that looks like the seal that Martin Luther used,
mm-hmm.
that represent the fact that they don't want this to occur.
So we will
look visually divided.
And well, I guess we're going to have to wait for the vote and see what happens.
Yes.
Jason DeRose, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Jason DeRose joined us by phone from the Orlando World Center Marriott, and we will get back there because we're going to be talking now with Pastor Jeff Johnson of the University Lutheran Chapel in Berkeley, California, and it's nice to have you on the program.
Good afternoon, Neil.
This debate over ordination of homosexuals or sexually active homosexuals is very personal for you. You're one of those who I guess is described as an illegal pastor?
I was actually ordained in 1991 after having been certified for ordination in a predecessor church body because of the church's reluctance to ordain LGBT people who have not committed to celibacy. That's correct.
LGBT.
Lesbian and gay, bisexual, and transgender.
You could say it more quickly than I could.
Okay, that's fine. There are many GLBT or LGBT, gay and lesbian clergy in the church who serve with distinction in parishes and campus ministries and in the church-wide headquarters, even though we have a current policy which intimidates and discriminates against us and which, in an odd way for Lutherans, requires celibacy of this class of people. Lutherans have been around for 500 years, and 500 years ago decided that the church can't impose celibacy upon mm-hmm. the priesthood, and it's a strange thing that this current denomination has chosen to do that among gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people.
Is it actually enforced, or is it, we're just not going to look?
It's enforced inconsistently. In our synod, the Northern California and Northern Nevada Synod, the Sierra Pacific Synod, there are over a dozen parishes and clergy who are openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. The parishes are under no discipline, even though their pastors are very open. Throughout the country, there are many synods where the policy is ignored and not enforced. There are those synods and there are bishops who use the policy to threaten, to intimidate into silence and invisibility clergy who are otherwise qualified and serving with distinction.
And do those same sorts of inconsistencies apply to gay marriages?
That's very interesting. The church, Lutherans should be at the forefront in the civil marriage discussion because we have this great understanding of marriage as a civil affair, and in our churches we bless relationships of covenant and covenantal promise. So we should be able to affirm civil marriage for all people and to welcome into our churches gay and lesbian people who have celebrated their marriages, but the current policy would require, for example, a Lutheran pastor married to a same-sex partner in the state of Massachusetts to do the ridiculous thing of committing to lifelong celibacy in order to stay on the clergy roster. It's a horrible thing. It puts people in unbelievable binds, bishops, candidacy committees, and clergy. And the policy must be abolished. It should not be accommodated by our church and is not supported by its history, by its tradition, or by its theology.
As you know, there are people who will dispute on all those points, but
sure,
we'll put that off for the moment. You say it must not be able to stand. Well, what if it is? What if the vote goes the other way?
Well, it's clear that in our church, the trajectory is for justice, that it's clear where the church is headed. The question is, how long will it take the church to get there? So no one can predict what will happen in the next couple of days, but LGBT people, our allies, our families, our spouses and children are heartened by the fact that all of these things, tradition and history and the way Lutherans interpret Scripture, all of these things point to a day, hopefully not too soon, when gay and lesbian people will be able to live without threat of intimidation.
We just have a few seconds,
sure,
with you. That sounds like you would accommodate a vote in the wrong direction and bide your time. Stay in the church.
Gay and lesbian people grow up in the church. We're not going anywhere, but we are witnessing boldly to our presence, and we will protest vigorously a failure to abolish the policy.
Jeff Johnson, thanks very much.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Jeff Johnson is the pastor of University Lutheran Chapel in Berkeley, California. He joined us from the General Lutheran Assembly in Orlando, Florida. When we come back from a short break, we'll be talking with somebody on the other side of the argument. We also want to get your calls in on this question of gay marriage, gay clergy. Is it an issue where you worship? Is it, if you don't worship, an issue that you care deeply about? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Debate today is at the Lutheran Church Biannual General Assembly in Orlando, Florida, but it's been earlier at other Protestant denominations. It will be later at still more. Should the church allow gay clergy? Should it bless gay unions? You're invited to join the conversation. What are you hearing at church about homosexuality and your clergy? Are you impacted by the debate within the Lutheran Church or within other Protestant denominations? 800-989-8255. Email us, totn@npr.org. And we're going to go now to the other side of the debate. Just before the break, we heard from Jeff Johnston, a pastor at the University Lutheran Chapel in Berkeley, California. Joining us now is the Reverend Joy Harrisville, the third, a Lutheran pastor from Minneapolis and executive director of the group Rock Solid Lutherans. He joins us also from the General Assembly in Orlando, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm from Solid Rock Lutherans.
Okay, please excuse me. We got that little dyslexia on the staff here. We just heard Jeff Johnson's arguments to go ahead and allow the ordination of sexually active gays and lesbians, as well as blessing gay unions. What's your position?
Well, our position is that our current policies are sufficient, balanced, and fair, because our current policies actually do allow for the ordination of gays and lesbians. But they do not allow for such folks to engage in sexual activity, as is the policy for all single people. Therefore, the ELCA already does welcome homosexuals completely into the life of its communion.
Yet, obviously, you've heard the arguments. The other side would say it's pastors, straight pastors, are not discriminated against. They can apparently have sex. It's just gay pastors who cannot.
No, all single pastors who wish to be ordained in...
And I see, since you can't be married, I see. This is where it goes on. Let me get on to the question then of gay marriages. This is a question, obviously, not just your denomination, but many others.
Mm-hmm.
Your position is?
Our position is that Scripture is very clear on this point, that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that is the current policy and practice of the ELCA, and it should remain that way.
Mm-hmm. So no change. You believe that the practice as it exists now should be upheld?
That is correct.
What about that first question that's going to be put forward to the delegates tomorrow? That is, should this be a church-dividing issue?
Well, I have been working hard for 2 years, and Solid Rock Lutherans has been working hard for 2 years to make sure that the ELCA remains faithful and intact, so that should a split occur, we will not have done our job. We are hoping that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. But if the vote goes the other way, if your side loses?
Well, I've been telling reporters for a couple of weeks that my crystal ball is in the shop for repairs, and I'm just hoping that everything turns out well. I'm not planning for things to turn out poorly.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Let's turn first to Gary. Gary calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess my question was for your previous guest, but why would they want to stay with an organization that automatically discriminates against them? Why not create their own church but they don't have to abide by the laws of people that are discriminant?
Well, let me put that to you, Reverend Harrisville. If the vote does go the other way, if apparently the people disagree with you, why stay in the church?
Well, I think because we would like them to stay in our church, because we do wish to welcome all folks, but we do not welcome all behaviors. And this is a distinction I hope that your listeners are clear about, that when the Christian church says that certain behaviors are precluded, it's not making a statement on the person, but only on the practice. We want everyone to feel welcome in our churches, to come and partake of the sacraments, and to hear the word so that their lives are transformed. But we do not want everyone to assume that they can do anything they want.
But either way, you're still discriminating, so why shouldn't they just create their own church where they can have their own beliefs, where they wouldn't have to be discriminated against?
Well, you'll have to ask them that question.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Gary, for the call. The vote does come up tomorrow. I know that there are some synods, such as the Sierra Pacific Synod, that have already ordained sexually active gay clergy. Do you think that they will stay if the decision goes against them? Again, maybe we should be asking them.
Well, you've got to be careful about that statement, because there have been, shall we say, extraordinary or perhaps illicit ordinations.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the ELCA does not allow such ordinations now. And we have to be careful about that, Neil, that we don't get that wrong.
Okay.
Okay?
And this is a crossroads, do you think, for the Lutherans?
Well, it's a crossroads between two different gospels, one of transformation and one of affirmation. The gospel of transformation says God loves us, but he loves us too much to leave us the way he finds us. The gospel of affirmation says God just wants to leave us as we are. That's actually the nexus of the debate and why this is so important. And I'm hoping that people realize that this is a gospel issue, that this is a core belief issue. It's not just about interpretation of certain scriptural passages, but actually about the center of our faith and the identity of who we are. And I'm hoping we can retain that so that we have a clear witness.
Reverend, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Reverend Roy Harrisville III heads a congregation in Minneapolis, Minnesota, also the executive director of Solid Rock Lutherans, and he joined us from the Lutheran General Assembly in Orlando. Professor John Butler joins us now from the studios of Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, where he's the dean of the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences and professor of American Religious History. And it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
It's nice to be here.
Now, I understand that this is, aside from biblical interpretation, as we just heard the Reverend Harrisville talk about, are there reasons why denominations worry about ordaining gays and lesbians?
there are reasons that denominations worry about ordaining many kinds of people, and there are reasons that denominations worry about the behavior of many kinds of people. And historically, denominations have long regulated the behavior of clergy. At least they have regulated the behavior of clergy by word. The difficulty is that most denominations, and I do want to say most denominations, whether they're Protestants, Catholics, Jewish, haven't done a very good job of living up to the promise of regulating the behavior of clergy. And they have often treated these questions with embarrassment, or they have wanted to shunt them aside. And so this particular debate within a Lutheran denomination is unusual because of its openness and of the open effort to regulate the behavior of clergy. And I want to speak specifically about the historical question of the treatment of women. Mm-hmm. A historian by the name of Karen Gedge wrote a book published several years ago called Without Benefit of Clergy, which was a study of women and their relationships with Protestant pastors in the 19th century, in 19th century America. And her story is a particularly saddening one, because despite all the regulations about the behavior of male clergy, whether they were married or they were not, many male clergy in many denominations took, one could say, gross advantage of their place as clergy to foist themselves on women, married women, single women, young women. And, of course, recently we've had the case of a Roman Catholic Church with many regulations about the behavior of priests, and yet we have a long and very sad history of sexual abuse within the Roman Catholic Church that probably is paralleled in many regards in other denominations, but is particularly has come out with particular force within Roman Catholicism. So in terms of the long run, the concern about the behavior of clergy is an old one. It goes back, I could take you back to Baptist records in the colonial period, in which the denomination, a tiny denomination with only 15 or 20 Baptist ministers, was very much concerned about the behavior of their own clergy in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And so it's an old, old question. With many ramifications.
Well, that's the reason we wanted to have you on, is to provide some historical perspective, because the issue today is homosexual marriage, sexually active gay clergy. Yet this is not the first moral question that the churches have been confronting over the past 100 years or so.
Absolutely. And one could take this sort of find a parallel, I think, in the slavery question in the 19th century. And I want to emphasize what I'm going to say now is only a parallel. I don't want to suggest there's a cause and effect relationship, or I don't want to suggest that it's the same question. But in the debate over slavery, it's very important to understand that pro-slavery advocates cited many, many, many biblical passages from both the Old Testament, or for Jews, the Hebrew Bible, but for the Old Testament and the New Testament, sanctioning slavery as a Christian institution. And in fact, Southern Protestant clergymen especially made the argument that we shouldn't abolish the institution, we actually should reform it. That is, we should encourage slaveholders to be better Christians, to treat their slaves better, slaves that they legitimately owned. And others, particularly Northern abolitionists, made the argument that those men and some women were missing the point. They were missing the point about the nature of morality. Was it really possible to own someone and still be a Christian? And that it was true that some of the prophets, for example, quote, owned slaves. But A, the nature of slavery was different in Old Testament times, and B, the nature of the New Testament theology really aimed toward larger issues of morality that transcended older institutions like slavery, and that actually made them not so much irrelevant as illicit. So some regards, the debate here forms in the Lutheran debate. There are many specific passages that advocates, anti-gay advocates, cite, saying it's not permissible to be gay. And those Lutherans who want to support gays will argue on issues of a larger morality and acceptance, and especially on the issue of love, that this is how we need human beings come to us in many different different forms, and God has made them in many different forms, and that, in fact, there really isn't anything wrong with homosexual behavior.
We're talking with John Butler, Dean of the Graduate School at Yale University, Professor of American Religious History. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Tricia. Tricia calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes. I'm curious about this. I'm not a religious person, but, and actually this conversation is part of the reason why. I'm wondering about this, these two doctrines of either transformation or affirmation, and I'm wondering why your guest doesn't imagine that the transformation wouldn't apply to his own thinking and the doctrine of the church as it stands, and why he imagines that that should apply to gays and lesbians and how they live their lives.
That was our previous guest, Reverend Harrisville, so I don't want to assign those opinions to John Butler, but let me ask you about that framing of the conversation, at least in Orlando today, as a church of affirmation or a church of transformation. Is that does that go back in history as well?
Oh, absolutely, of course, because all denominations, all religious groups have to make a basic decision about how they approach society. Do they transform society? Do they accept it? And most importantly, in fact, what do they mean by those statements? When you accept something, doesn't mean that you also accept it in all of its dimensions, and it doesn't mean also that you, on the other hand, that you transform everything, that you abolish everything. And this debate among the Lutherans is a debate that's been held on many different kinds of questions in most denominations, and not just within Christian denominations, but it's important to Islam, it's important to Judaism, it's important to most of the world religions.
Well, actually, as I imagine, you would apply, Christ's teachings, which obviously Islam and Judaism isn't obligated to apply.
N.A., yes, I think not apply, yes.
Sure, that's right. I would imagine that, given, that Christ's teachings are, fairly specific about, love and acceptance, I would imagine that that would challenge the Lutheran Church and any Christian church to rethink their approach to people who may be different than the church's elders. So I'll certainly take the rest of my answer offline, and I appreciate your response.
Oh, well, thank you very much for the call, Tricia. Appreciate it. Let me ask you, John Butler, some of these moral quandaries you talked about, obviously the debate over slavery divided the nation. I assume it divided churches. Let me put that same question regarding the debate over another moral issue that raged through the first part of the 20th century, and that over alcohol and prohibition.
Well, of course, they divided churches and denominations in a much more subtle fashion. Some denominations flourished. The Methodist Church, for example, was almost synonymous with abstinence and with teetotaling and with prohibition. And, of course, the Roman Catholic Church was famous as sort of the bogey person of drinking. That is, these were the images that were cast up by anti-Catholic advocates in the United States. Mm-hmm. And there were real ethnic and religious divides over those kinds of over that very question of alcohol. And, of course, in the long run, we gave up on prohibition, but then again, we live in a society that deals with the tragedy of alcohol abuse as much, for example, as we deal with the tragedy of drug abuse mm-hmm. or sexual abuse in our society. And so the issue is still with us, even if we found in the long run that prohibition wasn't the way to approach that question. It certainly didn't succeed.
But very briefly, the divisions within the church, did they heal after prohibition was rejected?
Oh, I think so. The Methodist Church took a long time to sort of get away from a teetotaling approach. And, of course, anti-Catholicism declined in the United States, and so that image of Catholics as drinkers generally speaking, declined in the United States. And within denominations, I think the issue really did go away. Some would say, and I don't mean to speak for them, but some would say it shouldn't have, because, we're still left with the residue of that problem in United States history.
John Butler, thanks very much. John Butler is a religion professor and dean of the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences at Yale University. He joined us from Yale Studios in New Haven, Connecticut. When we get back from a short break, we bury the needle, the results of the TOTN Movie Awards' greatest car chases of all time. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.